Welcome to the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, a show that helps you learn how planners can generate significantly more wealth now. Nathan will answer your questions about business or personal finance, or how to increase current cash flows and generate retirement savings to make sure you're on the right path, and so much more. Whatever your financial goal, Nathan can get you there faster. And now, here's your host, Nathan Ross.
Welcome to this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. We're glad you could join us today. And before we get started, I want to remind you that we are not rendering legal, accounting, or other professional advice on today's show. And if you require such advice, we strongly recommend that you engage a professional advisor. If you don't have professional advisors that understand real estate taxation, retirement plan taxation, real estate private partnership syndications, and zero tax math, you are more than welcome to go to the BeAPlannerShow.com website, and you will see a forms link just a little bit under the page title. And right to the right of that is a call link. And if you will complete at least step one, form one, on the forms page, you are welcome to go schedule a call where we can discuss your specific facts and circumstances and see how we might sync up with helping you meet your goals and objectives. And you know, most of our clients are at a point where they realize they're behind the eight ball, or most of our prospects, I should say. I hope our clients aren't. And depends on how long they've been with us and how many transactions they've undertaken. But this, the real estate private partnership syndication space, I think, is like no other in terms of you being able to catch up if you're behind on your retirement wealth, as so many people are. And whether you, maybe you think you're not, but when you understand that the life expectancy these days, even the IRS has tables that show most males living to 85, 86, most females 87, 88, and then there's some further buckets of ages. If you're, I believe if both spouses, I can't remember the cutoff. I want to say if they both make it to age 60 or perhaps it's 62, the odds are very high that one will live to almost 90 years old. If not, I think it may have been 90. And, you know, when you think about the cost of living, I mean, my goodness, what hasn't gone up, right? And significantly. And I mentioned on the show yesterday, you know, you they're looking at some of the articles, or one of the articles we talked about had apartment rents that had gone up 20%+ over the last 4 years. And I was thinking, you know, so had the hamburger that I had at Bex Prime the other day. In fact, I don't think it was 4 years. I think it was about a year, year and a half. And so when you multiply that out, you look at the cost of medical care, you look at the cost of housing, of food, as I mentioned, everything is more expensive. And, you know, specifically for retirees, you know, the big elephant in the room, so to speak, is long-term health care cost. And you may be shocked to know what those costs are. I'm dealing right now, right at this moment, with my mom that's in hospice care and has been in skilled nursing facility for the past month and a half. And I can just tell you, if you're not prepared, if you don't have a clue what those costs are, you really need to evaluate how you will pay for and fund or if you'll be able to fund those costs. And, you know, it's I believe the statistic is over somewhere over half of all married couples in America will one or the other, the spouses will be in a long-term health care, assisted living, or skilled nursing scenario at some point in life. And you know, the long-term health care insurance, if you buy that sort of policy, very expensive. You're talking about I don't know, in Texas, most facilities are in the $7,500 to $8,500 or $8,500 range. If you're up in the Northeast, of course, the costs are much, much higher. But, you know, there's other ways besides buying a long-term health care policy to fund those costs. And one tool that we use with our clients is Index Universal Life coverage. It's a cash type policy, cash accumulation. And typically, an Index Universal Life, to be clear, is not an inexpensive proposition. However, you've got four different prongs of benefit, if you will, where you've got a legacy benefit, a death benefit, in other words, and then you've got a cash value that you can borrow, and if done properly without having to pay it back, and I do underscore if done properly. If it's not done properly, you'll pay tax on every dollar at a certain point. So I would urge you that, you know, you want to make sure you're working with someone, insurance, tax, et cetera, that understands how to structure Index Universal Life coverage. It's not every policy that qualifies in the manner that I'm telling you. And then that's two of the prongs. So you've got legacy benefit, death benefit. You've got a cash value benefit at some point once you've paid in or still paying in. And then you've got the ability to add a chronic illness and or a long-term health care rider to that policy. And typically, depending on the facts and circumstances involved, that can be done at little, if any, cost. And so when you look at that Index Universal Life policy cost, it's not nearly as onerous as you might think when you compare it to just buying long-term health care coverage. And long-term health care coverage, when you buy that, what if you're not one of the 50% of all American couples that will need it? The money's gone. Whereas in the Index Universal Life scenario, you've still got the death benefit or the legacy feature still in place. And by the way the long-term health care component works, if you add the rider to an Index Universal Life policy, is your insurance policy will advance you the dollars from your death benefit to pay for long-term health care cost. So it's a pretty effective way, and it you know, turns a otherwise what I think of, I don't like insurance. I find it distasteful on the one hand. On the other hand, when I look at it in this context where I've got four different ways that a policy is taking care of someone, I'm okay with that. And to me, it makes sense. And I don't have a problem recommending that everyone, especially if you're in your 50s and you're in good health, take a look at adding an Index Universal Life policy to your financial wealth or assets, however you want to define that. But in any event, let's see here. I wanted to go ahead and mention a couple things that are in the news. Of course, we had the Trump verdict yesterday. I'm sure most of you are aware at this point of that. And I just, you know, it's hard to believe it's America that I was watching yesterday with that outcome. And, you know, it interests me on several fronts, but the fact that being convicted of tax fraud, I'm not sure if it's criminal, whatever he was, the issue with respect to the tax matter, which I would challenge you to find two jurors on that jury that understand what is being called tax fraud. I didn't hear anything throughout the trial, saw no evidence of any tax fraud, and I just it boggles the mind how the convictions could be made without, you know, the crimes being established. And again, I would love to poll the jury and ask, what did you convict him of besides being Donald Trump? You know, that effectively was his crime. But anyway, it'll be interesting to see. I've listened now to more than a few experts, Jonathan Turley and Saul Weisenberg are two of the attorneys I like to watch that have been in this game for a long time. And, you know, they're never going to act like it's 100% guaranteed. But as they say, there's a very strong case that this verdict will be overturned. And I would say there's an even stronger case that Mr. Trump will likely be our next president. And it's going to be interesting to see if or how he might constrain his desire for retribution. Because, boy, I tell you, I don't know of anybody else in our history, at least not in my lifetime, that's been pummeled in the fashion that he has. And I don't know. I wouldn't want to be on the other side if he is elected. In any event, as you know, from time to time, like every week, we discuss news articles to illustrate some of the commercial real estate topics that we opine on. And I didn't add any new articles from yesterday, but there's articles from the past couple weeks that I didn't get to. So I guess I would like to talk about some of those articles. But I also want to mention that a couple things. You know, I talked about the old school, quote unquote, real estate investor mentor platforms. And I often say the travel agent of yesteryear, where, you know, we used to call our travel agent and ask him to get us some options for buying a ticket to greener pastures or vacation pastures, whatever you want to call it. And they would come back with the options and we would tell them, okay, book it. You know, let's book one of the options. And now we don't do that, or at least I don't. You know, I get on Google Flights typically, and, you know, there's assorted other sites. I really don't think, having been doing this now for 20 years with my international traveling, I can't think of another site that has the wealth of tools and information as Google Flights. But anyway, it's turned what I would call an SAT exam into a pop quiz in terms of being able to come to a decision, see my options, and then come to the decision. And it's pretty spectacular. But in any event, likewise, in the real estate private partnership syndication world, you don't need to join one of the old school travel agent, quote unquote, platforms. You can go to multiple sites and find syndicators that will allow you to invest directly with them. And I know those that run the platforms are going to say, well, yeah, but that's a big risk, because you don't know who those folks are, and you don't know how adept or skilled they might be, and you may end up investing in a deal that ends up in foreclosure, or perhaps you sell it at a price where you don't get your money back, et cetera. And all I'm going to say is, well, guess what? You've got syndicators on your platform. I don't know of a platform, and if anybody tells you, as they're asking you to write them the check for $20,000 to $25,000, if they tell you that they don't have transactions that have ever gone under, I'm going to tell you they're lying. It happens not every day, but it's happening now. And the three-year bridge debt structure that so many transactions were undertook 2.5 years ago, and now all the chickens are coming home to roost, has caused every platform I know of, the big, what I would say, mainstream platforms like CrowdStreet and Realty Mogul, they've had failures. The local platforms, you know, Self-Made Millionaires platform and the other one that I don't particularly think has any value at all here in the Houston market. They talk about wealth like a wealth school of sorts. And I'll just tell you, they've had failures. I've got clients in these transactions. Don't tell me there's no failures. And by the way, I'll be happy to have either of the founders of those groups on my show for an hour, and we can commiserate together, okay? I'd like to understand what they're thinking they can do and I know they don't in and of themselves offer transactions, but they allow transactions, and in some cases they mandate that you cannot undertake a transaction unless you've paid them additional funds. In fact, it's every case that I'm aware of, you're either going to pay a higher membership fee because you've got to do the basic $20,000 or $25,000 fee to be part of the quote preferred group in any event, or you've got to, and or you pay for a special training program. I think it's $10,000 or so to be a quote lead partner. So any way you look at it, the platform is getting fees from people that want to undertake syndications. In the case of the wealth school, I'm going to use that term colloquially, you're going to pay a fee to present your transaction to the membership. And so as far as I know, there's not a separate program for training, use that word in italics, lead partners, but each time they have a transaction they want to undertake and raise money through the group, they're going to pay a fee. And so, you know, where I'm headed here and what this brings you to ultimately, if you're a thoughtful, rational thinker, is that maybe I might not hear the black and white truth, so to speak, when someone's trying to sell me. They know they won't get my capital unless I'm convinced that they've got a great transaction. So what are you going to hear? You're going to hear about what a great transaction it is, and they're going to show you marvelous projections, pro forma, all of them, and they're going to show you, or they're going to claim that, you know, I've yet to see a deal come through any of these platforms where it wasn't purchased below market. That just seems to be baked in to every transaction that comes through these platforms. And I'm not saying some of them aren't below market, but I'm also going to tell you, market is what you're buying it for. Don't think you're the only party that's buying that looked at a property. There's going to be other syndicators that looked at it that passed on it because they weren't willing to undertake it, even at the price that maybe you're getting it for. And I've never seen a transaction where the syndicator, had a grand slam right out of the chute because they knew somebody. And that's what you're going to hear. You're going to hear, well, you know, we've worked with this lender before. The lender's got a loan on a property that's in trouble. I know of a transaction right now that's in that status. It's on Self-Made Millionaires platform. It's going under, and the lender is working out a transaction with another syndicator that used to be with Self-Made Millionaires platform, but he was cast aside. He was asked to leave. He was shown the door, I guess. If it were baseball, he was yanked, you know, in the seventh inning. And in any event, you know, that group is talking about what a low cost basis they're getting the property for. They've shined it up. They've apparently think that the low cost basis allows for profits going forward, and it may. It's just a low cost basis doesn't necessarily change anything. The low cost basis could be, hey, that's the cost basis right now based on market. And, you know, we're getting a deal that we need to underwrite and do our due diligence on to make sure it will make money going forward. We don't care about what happened in the past. We don't care about how much the last group paid for it and how much they lost or made on it. And if that's how we bought properties, we might never end up buying, because you always want to think you're getting a deal. And truthfully, you can make money on the buy. There's no question we can make money on the buy in many situations. But in any event, I want to be clear that, again, what we do is we provide independent advice regarding real estate private partnership syndications or real estate investment if you're buying something on your own. And by the way, we think that a great opportunity or great alternative in this market is to buy smaller apartment buildings where you're not going to be a part of a group of 80 people or 180 people, as the case may be, and your capital is not going to be diluted, and that's D-I-L-U-T-E-D, as opposed to delusional, which are what some of these transactions are. And, you know, you can pay for a management company if you're not paying sordid fees on acquisition, on capital raise, on debt placement, on refinances, on dispositions, or you're not allowing a syndicator a 20 or 25 or 40% promote. That'd be an override that you're handing them out of your money. Your money is paying for that asset that the syndicator is taking anywhere from, in most cases, you know, 20 to 40%. There are some situations where it would be less if they're a first time or perhaps a second time lead partner. Or if they look at a deal and they underwrite it, and I've seen this happen more than a few times, where the lead partner is very rational and says, hey, I'm going to reduce my override on this deal because I'm putting my money in it. I'm going to make money on this transaction. I like the transaction. I'm willing to put my money where my mouth is. And since I'm going to be able to make money on my money, I'm going to reduce the override that I get. And I like leads that do that, especially if they've been to the finish line before, because having that experience is most important, very important. So anyway, small apartments, we're going to be talking more and more about them. I have invested in transactions that have 4,500 apartments in them, a portfolio. I've also invested in a single property that has 700 units. And then I own an 8-unit in San Antonio. And I'll tell you, there's you know, pros and cons to each of those approaches. But I'll just tell you right now, with the current market, the way that fees are being layered on these larger transactions, I like the small apartment market. And I'm going to suggest that that may be something for you to consider. And then, you know, you reap more of the benefit. You don't have to hit a grand slam just to get a single, which is what you're going to have to do in some of these larger partnerships, because the way the fees are assessed and the way the profits and cash flows are shared. And I know it may not seem as glamorous, but hey, your bank account will be more glamorous in many cases, and it's worth it. Okay, well, we've gone well past the break. We may have to lose one of our remaining breaks, but let's go ahead and take a break now. We'll circle back here momentarily with more of this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
People always coming up to me and asking, what's your secret?
With all you do, your attitude just seems to be so good. How do you keep it? Well, I'm not the Dalai Lama, but I'll try to offer up a few words of advice. You better get to living, giving. Don't forget to throw in a little forgiving and love along the way. You better get to knowing, showing a little bit more concern about where you're going. There's a word unto the wise. You better get to living.
BeAPlanner.com wants to ask you, when's the last time your tax pro called with a way to save you taxes? Seriously, do you want to work with a planner or a reporter? A planner knows which tax code sections are the best wealth accumulation tools. Less tax, more profit. Learn more at BeAPlanner.com. The Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195. 713-581-0195. Or you can send an email to Nathan at NPRoss.com. Nathan at NPRoss.com.
Have you recently joined a real estate mentor program? BeAPlanner.com shows how real estate investments combined with proactive tax planning can generate significant wealth. However, syndication terms for private real estate partnerships are complicated. They help you assess the benefits of ownership from A acquisition to E exit. A planner wants to know what they are signing up for. BeAPlanner.com with CPA Nathan Ross. BeAPlanner.com.
Like the song, Bobby McGee, I'm just longing to be free. Take me away, I want to be. Big dreams and fake dreams. And there are many just like me.
With big dreams and fake dreams.
Okay, welcome back to more of this week's Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, and trying to get back to the point where I was indicating that we don't sell, we don't promote investments, we don't provide legal, tax, or accounting advice. We hope we have some entertaining content, but we're not providing you with entertainment, as I believe several of the other real estate shows announce at the top and at the end of their shows. And I will acknowledge they are somewhat entertaining with some of the content that they provide, but you'd have to know the inside on most of it to appreciate it. And I, having been around both the groups I've mentioned for 20 years as member for most of that time, or some of it anyway, I would rather have some meat. I'd rather know, you know, how do I decide which of the transactions you have are really solid, because what they don't teach you is enough math, and they don't have people that are independent. They have people that have they've got a dog in the hunt, so to speak, to get you to invest in their transactions, because if they don't, the organization won't be around. If they can't keep bringing in more members and have you invest in those transactions versus others that you might see, you know, in the syndication space and might be interested in. And I'll just tell you, and again, I have a lot of clients that are members of both of these organizations, but I'll tell you the best transactions right now across my group of clients are with syndicators that are not members or weren't members of either one of these groups. And they're syndicators that have been to the finish line many times. They've been shot at, so to speak, in some cases literally. Lane Bean with PilotLegacy.com, 29-year fighter pilot, you know, in the Air Force. So a guy like that knows what to worry about in life, I can promise you, okay? And Lane has a transaction that several of our clients invested in 2 years ago that's doubled in value. And I know that sounds unlikely, and it does have a backstory to how he did that. But, hey, those are the kind of transactions I'm on the prowl for, and I look for those scenarios. And I don't worry about being a member of any platform to get to transactions like that. So if you, too, would like that, sync up with us. Let's connect. And by the way, we charge a lot of money to do what we do. And yet I'm going to tell you, if you're not sure, if you want to try us, you know, I can do some a la carte pricing on a transactional basis where you'll spend a lot less money to figure out if this real estate private partnership space is for you. You know, we'll pick off a deal or two at a fraction of what I would otherwise charge. And once you can see this is what it's about, you do a proof of concept perhaps with a transaction, then we can talk about, well, what other types of planning do we include in these transactions? I don't work for free. I will talk to you for free. If you want to find out more about how we can work with you, go schedule a call, baplannershow.com, and be happy to talk to you about your goals and objectives and how we might be able to help you. Let's do this. Let me see. I wanted to just mention, got a transaction that one of my clients sent me, and I was just looking through the email, and I have not looked at this transaction, and I haven't even opened a document, but in the email, there was an FAQ that I thought, you know, this is something that I can talk about on the air, and it'll probably answer questions that many of you have. But after the show ends each week, I've hit you with enough, instead of a faucet, a drip, it's a fire hydrant on the topics, the content. I understand that, and I apologize for that. But, you know, we talk about it every show pretty much, and so I figure over time, I guess through osmosis, some of these terms and some of this, some of these concepts might soak in. But let me go through some of these, because again, I think you might find it helpful, and I will elaborate so that it's not just Q&A. Investor FAQ. And by the way, this transaction is a 506C transaction, which means you need to be accredited. You don't have to have been connected with the syndicator already before this transaction was offered. Unlike the 506B offering, and those are code sections, 506B or statute sections rather, 506B and 506C are sections of the crowdfunding statute. And the difference, the big difference is 506B is for non-accredited investors, people that have not or that do not have $1 million net worth, not counting your residence, or you don't make a minimum of $200,000 to $300,000 a year. If you're over the $1 million mark, or you make in excess of $200,000 to $300,000 a year, you're accredited. And that allows you a little more flexibility. And in the context of what I just mentioned, if you're a non-accredited, you have to have already connected with a syndicator and provided them enough information where they understand whether you're sophisticated, and that's a That's a SEC term. I know you're probably thinking, well, gee, I'm new to all this. I'm not sophisticated. You know, I'm from Pasadena, so I guess I could say that, right? But I'm accredited. So anyway, the SEC is trying to make sure that the uninitiated don't get taken advantage of. So if you're under the $1 million mark, under $200,000, $300,000 a year in income, you are restricted from participating in transactions where you didn't already know the syndicator that's bringing it to market. The accrediteds can find out about something after the fact. You may hear me talking about something on the air, and if it's a Class C, you are still eligible to connect with that syndicator and assess whether or not you might want to do that transaction. Anyway, so what is the target hold period for this investment? That's something you should always ask. You need to know, am I getting my money back in 3 or 4 years or 6 or 7? Or is this a Grant Cardone deal where he's 10 years to get your money back? Or it's what I heard on one of his webinars recently. He may have said, well, I'm referring to my 10X scenario, but I can tell you right now, Grant Cardone does not undertake transactions with the concept of getting you a 10X return, even over 10 years. And I just, you know, again, I've only got clients that have been in his transactions for 3 to 4 years. And all I can tell you is that the pace he's going right now, he's not going to be anywhere close. We would hope their money doubles over 10 years. And I've actually heard him say that on occasion, and he does slip up occasionally with his verbosity on his transactions when he's talking about them. And maybe it's a Freudian slip, I don't know. But I would tell you that with buying the type of properties he does, and overpaying as he does, and I'm not the one that's assessed that. He himself has said, I've seen it in videos, I'm sure we could find it if we had to, that he will pay more than a seller's asking, or that Grant thinks a property's worth, because he wants to do business with the guy again or the lady again. It's like, that's insane. Don't tell me that. If you want me to invest with you, I don't want to hear that. Just like I don't want to see videos about your new G650 that's being delivered and you're taking delivery on it. And, you know, I'd rather think that you're just a frugal, nose-to-the-grindstone kind of guy if you're taking my money with some hope of getting my money back plus a multiple. Anyway, what is, what's the period we're expected? What's the target hold period for this investment? And in this case, the answer is that they've underwritten to a 5-year hold. However, an exit is likely in years 4 to 5. I'm going to suggest to you that when somebody is projecting more than next month, okay, meaning they already have a contract and it's going to closing, look at the period of time we're in right now where nobody thought we would have the demand issue and the debt issue bumping heads on being able to sell a property. The cap rates have gone up, which makes your property worth less, which means you've got to sell it for more to cover your debt burden. Nobody saw this, or I say nobody did. Nobody underwrote for it, or at least I didn't see deals that were saying, hey, we're going to be in for some rough waters 5 years out. You barely saw that 2 years ago when transactions came out. What is the minimum investment? That's the next question. The minimum investment on this transaction is $50,000. And it is possible, in this case, they might take $25,000. And I would tell you anything is always possible as a syndicator gets closer to the point that they've got to fund a transaction. So if you're interested in a deal, have your money ready. Let the syndicator know, this is what I have. It's ready to go. You give me 24 hours notice. I'll have the wire on the way. The third question is, do you take IRA funds? Yes, we accept funds from a self-directed IRA or a solo K. A solo K is our preferred tool. We refer to it as a self-directed 401 trust. The Internal Revenue Code refers to trust created pursuant to Section 401. Not one time does the Internal Revenue Code refer to solo 401k. That's a marketing term, but that's one and the same the way it operates. So just to clarify that for those of you that have heard me talk about 401 trust. And naturally, they can refer you to custodians or service providers to set those up for you. How often will I get paid? Good question. You will receive quarterly distributions on this transaction starting January 2025, after our first full quarter of operations. Any unpaid pref, that'd be preference, from the partial quarter prior to this will accrue and be caught up upon the sale. So you can look at this several ways. One, I would rather not know if I'm concerned about the deal being what I'm going to call a real deal. A real deal, by the way, is only going to distribute funds to me after it's stabilized. And I don't like transactions where they're promising you distributions by a date certain, unless it's a transaction that is already renovated, brought up to market. We're buying this asset to hold it. We're not buying it to undertake a value add proposition to it. And it's going to be, think of it more like a T-bill, you know, treasury bill, where it's a solid, highly occupied, ready-to-go asset when we buy it. And, of course, you're going to pay more for that type of asset. We refer to that, the other term we use is it's a yield play, meaning, again, like a treasury bond, we're buying it for the yield. And, different folks have different ideas and have different risk tolerances, have different timing needs. If you're in retirement or approaching retirement and you need to know that you're going to be getting X number of dollars per month, then you want to focus on yield plays. You want to know that the property's already been renovated, already been leased up, and now we're sitting back and waiting for that quarterly distribution, or in this case it's quarterly. So it could be monthly, could be quarterly, could be once a year. That's all part of what you need to learn about or understand as you do the due diligence, so you can make sure it synchronizes with your goals and objectives. This is a good question, and I'm not shocked that it's in the FAQ, but I'll just say most of the time you got to ask the syndicator this question. They're not going to volunteer it. What are your fees as sponsors of the deal? The answer, we have an acquisition fee of 2%. Paid at closing. Let's call that day zero. And I don't, let me see how much this, if I've got it without going into the presentation that's linked here. Just trying to see how much it was. Well, it's 176 units. Let's assume that those units are 150,000 each. So let me see. 176 times 150. That would be $26 million. So on $26 million, if they're taking 2%, that is roughly, it's roughly $528,000. And the reason I say roughly is that there's probably some working capital. They're probably layering on an additional, $3 or $4 million. So you can bump that 2% number up a bit. But But folks, what I want you to understand is that's $500,000. It's probably closer to $600,000 by the time you add some reserves. So that's on day zero. Not $1 of rent has been collected, and that syndicator is walking out of closing, you know, probably throwing some confetti in the air if he's like some of them that I'm familiar with, and they're loving life. That, you know, they, and that's on top now of all of the expenses that they put out of pocket, appraisal fees, environmental fees, any kind of bank lender fees, any kind of commission paid to a loan broker, all the closing costs involved with the acquisition of the property. They're getting every dollar of that paid back plus the acquisition fee. And I guess all I can say is be glad there's also not a capital raise fee and a debt placement fee. Those could be another 1% or 2% in the case of some syndicators. And I would tell you on the what I call the wealth school, I could also call it the testosterone school, because there's a class or two on testosterone I've noticed there. I'm still not sure what that has to do with my net operating income on my investment. But anyway, there's syndicators in that group that I've seen firsthand that take a debt placement fee and a capital raise fee. They've walked out of closing with 4 to 5% up front in their going into their bank account. And these transactions were bigger than this one. So it was several million dollars that was coming out. And before you think, well, you know, the lender, it's coming out of their money. No, it's not. Lenders don't loan money to pay these fees. That's coming out of you passive investors' money. That's the capital dilution that I'm referring to, okay, that takes place on many transactions today. And it's why it's critical that you understand the math involved in the private placement memorandum and the operating agreement and where the levers are that allow even more to come out or other changes to take place going forward. I see transactions from time to time where you give the syndicator sole discretion. They have the ability to change their compensation and or their staff's compensation throughout the life of the deal. Don't need the passive investors' approval or acquiescence. They just have the right to do that, and you agree to it when you sign up and you provide your capital, and then you sign the operating agreement. The operating agreement is the Bible, the operating guide of that partnership, and there will be a provision in it that tells you that no matter what you may have heard on a webinar or you have on an email from the syndicator or anything other than that operating agreement that you execute, it doesn't matter. That document overrides anything you may have thought you heard, okay? So let's see. Oh, there were some additional fees. There was a one-time construction management fee, 5% of the CapEx, which is the capital expenditure to be applied to make the property beautiful. And I didn't dig into this transaction to see how much those funds were, but a management fee, construction management fee, is not uncommon. 5% is not uncommon, and it's likely righteous. I'd have to know more about the nature of the renovations. The pictures that they put in this private placement memorandum or this webinar appear to be, it's not decrepit. I mean, it may not be it's certainly not a Class A property, but it doesn't have bad curb appeal now. So maybe it's a lot of interior work. Let's move on. A couple more questions here. We've got just a few minutes. What is the preferred return to investors? Well, Class A investors have a preferred return of 10%, which will be paid from cash flow from operations, before the Class B and the Class C investors. Class B investors have a preferred return of 7%, and Class investor, I think they left off a C there, that's a typo. Class C investors have a preferred return of 8%. Any shortfall between operational cash flow and the preferred returns will accrue over the life of the deal and be caught up on sale. A lot of risk in the be caught up on sale crowd. And again, these are the reasons that you need to understand your operating agreement. You need to understand the waterfalls. That's what they're describing here. We refer to those as waterfalls. And the priority of each of those groups within those waterfalls so that you can assess whether you really will see any money before the end of the deal from cash flow. And again, if it's not leased up, January 2025 may not be, or the first quarter 2025 may not be realistic. And if they're over raising, so they'll have capital on hand, I don't know. You're an adult. I don't know what you would decide. I personally would rather you do a cash call, provided you're not over raising. Now, if you're over raising and then we still get a cash call, no thanks. I'll take the dilution that would otherwise be my choice when that happens, meaning that if you don't provide cash to your lead partner when there's a cash call, as there has been a lot lately, you don't lose your ownership interest, but your ownership interest is diluted or reduced pro rata with whoever does step up and put money in. Are you confident about your future pro forma rent projections? That's the next question to the syndicator. Answer, we have shown in the investment slide deck, we have shown what other similar projects are renting for today. Our pro forma rents are already below these rents. We expect rents to continue to grow over the next 24 months by the time we are ready for lease up. We believe this stance is a good way to remain conservative. Well, look, we talked about the rent growth for the month of March on yesterday's show, and I don't have time to go into that now. We might could pull that up on Sunday's show. But look, there's been a slight turnaround in rental growth rates in most markets. And I did not look yet at where this property is, but I'm going to tell you, don't be optimistic. Be pessimistic. Let's look at the last year instead of the last month. Okay, on rental growth. I track rental growth rates with the help of a real estate data intelligence company, and I'll find out what city this is in, and I'll tell you what the rental growth rates, what the absorption rates, what assorted other metrics are, and we'll compare, and we'll see whether there's a reason to be optimistic or not. Let's see, what are the equity splits and waterfalls, Class A investors? Well, I tell you what, we've got the music coming here. We're at the end of the show. This will be a good place to pick up on Sunday, if we don't, assuming I'm able to do a live show Sunday, we'll pick up with this project and talk more. I think it's a good one to illustrate a lot of the content that we seek to provide our listener. Thanks for tuning in. We hope you can join us again on Sunday, 7 a.m. right here on 700 a.m. AM 700 KSEV, the voice of Texas.